हरि ओ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 57, chapter 7, the Puranic Literatures. Vritti means the process of sustenance by which the moving beings live upon the non-moving. For a human, vritti specifically means acting for one's livelihood in a manner suited to his personal nature. Such action may be carried out either in pursuit of selfish desire or in accordance with the law of God. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The previously mentioned sthana or sustenance is here called vritti. That is explained in the verse. Because of desire in general, the sustenance of the moving beings is the non-moving beings, and sometimes even other moving beings indicated by the word cha. Among men, sustenance of the body according to one's nature out of desire or by regulation is called vritti. The whole of the earth is the shelter of the moving and non-moving beings. Right, so, you know, you're saying that all these people are going to be functioning according to this. What's recommended is that the non-moving, right, and then following the laws of Krishna, right. So that's the actual standard. So, but you know, yeah, but some may or may not be using those recommended methods. Therefore, it says the term vritti is used. Sudha Goswami continued. In each age, the infallible Lord appears in this world among the animals, human beings, sages, and demigods. By his activities in these incarnations, he protects Raksha, the universe, and kills the enemies of Vedic culture. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Poshanam was defined as mercy of the Lord previously. Now Poshanam is called Raksha. Raksha is explained. The activities of the Lord's avatars among animals, humans, and devatas, which are the cause of this appearing, are called Raksha. Why does he appear? The demons are killed by the avatars. Thus, Raksha means protecting the devotees from the afflictions of the wicked. As well, sometimes Raksha simply means protecting his devotee from great fear, without a demon being involved. Thus, the protection of Ajamil and others in the sixth canto is called Raksha. Even though there's no demon, still, he's being protected.
Right.
Yes.
Poshanam is different?
It's all the same. Poshanam means nourishing. But in that, you protect also, it's all part of the thing. When you nurture, then you're protecting, you're sustaining, you're doing all those things.
It was Poshanam was one of the 10 topics?
Yes, so it's saying, what it's basically pointing out here is that sometimes he's using a different word to define the same thing, so he's taking a different angle on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. So just like the vritti, because he's bringing in the point that some may live according to specifically following the rules, and some may live simply just because of their desire. Mm-hmm. They may be following the rules, but it's because of their desire. Mm-hmm. They want something, that's why they follow the rules. So they're smart enough to know that by following the rules, you'll get what you want, as opposed to those who don't follow the rules and don't get what they want. You know.
Can this be said as vichar?
Sorry?
Can this be said as vichar?
Means this whole discussion?
No, upon the words, the different angles.
Yes, different approaches like that. Means that there's 10 topics, so there's different approaches to the topic, so you could call that vichar. It's just different angles of seeing the each thing. So. Sudha Goswami continued, in each reign of Manu, six types of personalities appear as manifestations of Lord Hari. The ruling Manu, the chief demigods, the sons of Manu, Indra, the great sages, and the partial incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Previously, Manvantarani was defined as Saddharma. Here Manvantaram is described. The word Vidha means the persons like Manu who perform their duties. Right? Because Saddharma is those who are performing their duties. So seeing them, how they're acting. This takes six forms. Manvantara means the period in which these six types of persons carry out their designated jobs. Right? Why connect it there? Because in between, I mean, they will do those designated jobs for the Manvantara.
It's just the duration for which they do
Yes.
their job, that's the
Yes.
point?
Yes, but it's centered around the Manu, right? Because if the whole universe is about people going back to Godhead, and of all the species, then the human form is the best for that. So that makes Manu a very central feature. So in a day of Brahma, there's 14 Manus. And so with those Manus, then changed Indra, all the demigods, all the sages, all these different things. They all change. Like the seven rishis,
yeah.
That's 14 times in a day, it changes who's the seven rishis.
So those are the posts, is really.
Yeah, they're posts.
Okay.
They're posts.
So all those, they're posts.
Yes.
All six.
Yes. And so they do their designated jobs or their Saddharma during that period.
Mm-hmm.
But during the Manvantara.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sutta Goswami continued. Dynasties, Vamsa, are lines of kings originating with Lord Brahma and extending continuously through past, present, and future. The accounts of such dynasties, especially of their most prominent members, constitute the subject of dynastic history, Vamsa Anucharitam. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Vamsa is defined. The continuous line of kings arising from Brahma is called Vamsa. Vamsa Anucharitam is then described. The activities of those among the kings who are famous, such as Priyavrata, Dhruva, and Prithu, is called Vamsanucharitam. Footnote 11. These two items, Vamsa and Vamsanucharitam, take the place of Ishanukata from the list of the second canto. Uti from the first list is included in Visarga of the present list. Right? Because you have a Sarga and Visarga. So as how he's defined, then the Sarga is the primary creation that Krishna does. Then, so it gives the opportunity for the living entities to take part in fulfilling their desires. So then that creation that puts it together where then they now can go about trying to fulfill their desires. That's Visarga. That's the secondary. That's what Brahma does. Does that make sense? So it gives a reason for it.
Yes.
Means that the whole idea is the living entities are trying to fulfill their desires. And ultimately with the purpose of going back to Godhead. To do that, you have to have a format on which they can function. That's the primary creation.
Can we say that's general and the secondary is specific? Because it's according to the desires, specific desires of living entities.
Yeah, you could say like that, but then you have to be careful that it doesn't give more emphasis to the secondary creation.
No, it just
general. So that's why it says primary. That's why it's the fundaments on which the specifics can work. Like there's, let's say you have dog. Within the dog, you have so many species, and within that, you have so many aspects of personality that a dog can have. So depending, and all that is in the primary creation. So when we say it's general, meaning that it's not specific to any one living entity, but it has all the detail, all the specifics that are there in the secondary. Otherwise, the secondary can't work.
And what doesn't secondary have that primary has?
Nothing. It just has foolish living entities trying to enjoy themselves. Does that make sense? Let's just say like this. In the kitchen, you set it up that you have all the pots, all the pans, all the spoons, all the, you know, all the paraphernalias like this, all the different ingredients, all the spices, everything that you could use for the kind of cooking that you do. Right? That's the primary creation. The secondary is where you go in and actually cook a particular preparation. You understand? So that first, it's not general in that it doesn't have any detail. It's all the detail. But it's beyond what an individual living entity is using. But it's not beyond all the, what do you call it? The amalgam or something of all the living entities. Means all of them together may be using them all, but no individual is using them at any one time.
And primary creation, it exists always? And secondary is sometimes unfolding and sometimes not?
The primary is you can say, is what's manifesting when the pradhan turns into mahat. And all the ingredients come out, all the 24 ingredients are there. Then the seeing, the touching, the smelling, the demigod, all the different positions, the adiatmic, adidaivic, adibhautik, that's all primary. Then within the universe, that includes the universe itself. Garbhodakshay Vishnu and all that. Then he manifests Brahma, and all that primary creative potency is there in the lotus flower that Brahma is born on. Right? So that is also known as Virag or Virat. Right? You know, we hear the Virat Rup, the universal form. So that is the universal form. Then from that, now those he then creates. It's like the blueprint. Probably gives the example of the blueprint and the engineer. So the blueprint is theirs, what's to be done, and the engineer simply takes it. Because the engineer doesn't produce the blueprint, he doesn't produce the bricks, the cement, the steel, the rods, anything. You know, the concepts of how you lay bricks, or how he doesn't do any of that. All he does is put together what's already there. Does that make sense? So that's the difference between the two. You understand? So it is general and specific, but we can see is that the general is actually the bigger category. And the specific just allows for each individual to apply their desires within the context of that overall, the universal form. So,
something like the prototype which defines everything.
Yes, it's a prototype.
And then based on that, then Visarga has been built upon.
Yes, yes. But this prototype means it's the one that actually works.
And the kings, the dynasties, what's the importance?
Because they're the ones that are going to apply and see too that everything's going on.
And why not Brahmanas?
Because they're within in that line. Because, I'm sure you want an example.
No, I'm not sure, but it would be nice.
Okay, you have this Brahmin. He gets up in the Brahma Muhurta, he takes his bath. Then after he puts his tilak, chants his Gayatri, then sits for his morning, you know, yajna. And then after chanting all the mantras, going through that. Then after that, he puts all those things away. Then he gets out his books, he starts to study, or he may be teaching at that time. Then, you know, this will go on, and then he'll stop for his noon ablutions. He'll go for bath, chant his Gayatri, take his meal, sit, relax a little bit. Then he'll go, you know, check all the different things that he does through his house, you know, whatever is in his possessions and all that. Then he'll take his evening bath, chant his Gayatri. Then, depending if there's students, then he'll... Like this? like that. And then he'll do that the next day, and the next day. And then some disciples will come up, and that he'll have a son. He'll grow up doing those things, and then he'll continue doing those things.
Cool.
You understand? So, therefore, only something's very outstanding, and then you'll hear about those Brahmins along with the kings, because the kings and the Brahmins always go together. Because you don't have Brahmins without kings, or you don't have kings without Brahmins. Because the Brahmins can function in their capacity. It means in Satyayuga they don't require. Because they're everybody being Hamsa, they'll all just do what they need to. So the Brahminical aspects of the Brahminical culture are enough. But in Treta, then you require, you know, the full manifestation of the Kshatriya and the whole scene. Then the environment will be protected in which Brahmins then can perform their duties. So they become a leading person in the society. But you see along with them, always the leading Brahmins are coming forward. So as they give the line of kings, they only describe, they give the full line, so who's coming after who. But they'll only get into detail about the person's life if they're outstanding. You know, and that will be generally just the outstanding activities or things. You don't get into the daily stuff. So with Brahmins, because the idea is that the more it's regulated and all that, and then the better it is. So unless something very special happens, like let's say with Rishi Sringa or something like that, you don't hear much about them. Is that something says? But the kings, there's always something going on and something, because they're managing the whole, you know, earth or universal affairs. So there's always something weird going on. Because it's also, you have the aspect where Purana is the medium because it's much more relatable by everybody. The story is more relatable than just the technical points. Otherwise, the Upanishads already give all the essence. Right? Is that? So, then to hear these stories, and now Rupa Goswami mentions that if you're dealing with a drama, or, you know, with a story, then if you bring out the chivalrous aspect and the conjugal aspect, then you'll always have a good audience.
There are many powers of Rupa Goswami.
Yes. Therefore, then we see it's just natural that these aspects are brought out. Because then everybody will listen. Because otherwise, you get into technical points of the Brahminical, but then only Brahmins into that area will listen. You know what I'm saying? Like that, or technical things on the Kshatriyas and that, then only they'll listen. But if you describe, you know, the chivalry and the conjugal aspect, everybody will listen. So it's more universal. It's not that they don't throw in these details. That's the whole thing. Mahabharata is based on those two. But you see, it throws in all the other information. But in between here, and then goes back to the, you know, the story and all that. Does that make sense? You know, people would rather hear how Bhima is, you know, killing the Rakshasa than, you know, how the Brahmin is doing his Achman. Is that... No?
I was thinking in terms of preaching that, as you describe, it's 100% true, because audience, we're talking about devotees. If you try to explain philosophy, Siddhanta or Vedanta, then it's kind of, you know, it's
okay.
It's okay, but half asleep okay. It's not, nobody's excited, but as soon as something juicy comes up, then everybody's like really into it, many questions and like that.
Yeah, yeah. No.
So the question is whether should we follow the audience and go into that direction, or somehow or other we should bring them back.
The point is that you want to get across whatever you're discussing. So if you're discussing philosophy or culture or whatever it is, to bring out that in connection with Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
Then That would be, you're there. Now, according to your audience, then you would use whatever method will get that done. Mm-hmm. So telling a story or doing other things like this and that. So there's so many. In the tradition, you'll see it in North, then they would use the stories, and because you're saying the philosophy puts them to sleep. But even with time, sometimes they space out on the stories. In North, so they start a kirtan. And then when everybody's awake from the kirtan, they go back into the story. So that's in North. In South, generally they don't have so much of a problem like that. You can basically just tell philosophy, and if you throw in a few stories here and there, it's okay. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have to be centered on the stories. But in North, they center it on the stories.
Right.
Like that. And so then that's it's nice. If you can do it, then it's great. You know what I'm saying? It's just your what you can relate to, what you can deal with. That makes sense? You know, it's like Radhanath Maharaj will use a lot of stories.
Yeah.
And you see thousands of people will sit and listen to him.
Right.
You know, Indradyumna Maharaj will do, you know, so many will do, and they have huge amount of devotees listening. And in that, then they'll bring out the philosophy, the culture, all the different things like that. So it's a very, very good medium. It's just a matter of what works for you.
Because I'm thinking that Srila Prabhupada, he said that the four books, Gita, you know, like a, mm-hmm. like a basic course,
right.
It's for everybody.
Yes.
Whether devotees want to go further, that's, you know, if you incline, but if not, that's fine. But four books, everybody should know.
Yes.
But even this now is under discussion, whether it's like, it's too much philosophy.
Yeah, but where do you stop?
Huh?
Where do you stop?
Where do I stop?
No, not you, but I'm just saying. Yes, where did you stop?
At a pamphlet.
Yeah, like that. You know, then there'll be a discussion in the future that on chanting is just so much philosophy and culture, no one can, focus on it and things that, you know, on chanting? The pamphlet?
Yeah, the pamphlet. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's saying that if we start with, you know, do we have to live the whole Gita and this and that, and then, you know, give it, you know, another 50 years, and then the senior men will be discussing whether we should force devotees to actually, you know, read and understand this on-chanting pamphlet, or if it's just too fanatic to study all this and that.
Yeah.
Because the point is that's just given as the minimum. It's not that there's less than that. You can do less things to bring them to that level. But the idea is you should be bringing everybody to the level to know these four books. You know, so how you have to do that, that's another thing. But it's not that we would do less than that. That's the standard.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's just, others, some may be able to sit down and study all that, you know, over, you know, 6 months to a year and that. Some people may take many years to do. Like somebody's doing it, but they come to the temple once a week, you know, for the study program. And like this, they do it over so much time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But to do less than that, then what's the point? So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, new audiences, you may pick a thing, this and that, because Prabhupada already did, where he took one chapter and then wrote the small books. Because then they're getting a complete understanding within a very, you know, the small book. But it'll be generally one chapter of Gita.
Yes.
So it's just a matter of finding what people will do, but it should be you're trying to bring them to that standard. Because otherwise, if you get rid of stuff, then after a while, there'll be nothing left.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So it's just, that's the thing. The preachers use their, you know, intelligence to figure out how to engage people. according to these, how to absorb them, and see what works. You know, so if, you know, you do a 10-minute class and a, you know, half an hour of kirtan, like Prabhupada would do, they do half an hour of kirtan, then you give an hour of class, then half an hour of kirtan. But then he found with time, devotees couldn't focus more than 20 minutes. So you see, I think, not sure by when, but something like 69 or 70, by then it was down to half hour, 20-minute classes. And you see, before you talk on wider range, like the first 66 is Chaitanya Charitamrita courses, hour and a half classes. But, and, you know, on all the wide range. But then he was just, you know, focusing on you're not this body. But it's not that all those other things were there. He translated the whole and got printed the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's going through all these different... So the idea is that devotees in the beginning may be doing less, but with time they should be hearing and chanting more. Because if we don't point out the importance of it, then why will people do it? Right? Because if you're not studying the four books, what are we studying?
But that's the question. There's no preliminary to that. That's preliminary study. That's the very beginning study.
But
the four books.
Yeah, but if they're not studying that, what are they studying? Like today, what are devotees studying?
They don't study anything.
They study stuff.
Facebook.
It's just mundane.
Exactly.
With the idea of mundane knowledge and skills. So it's not that they're not studying.
Yeah.
It's just they're not studying this.
Right.
So it's a matter of making this interesting. That's one. But it's not entertainment. You know, it's not our business. And the second thing is that you, have to speak about the importance of it. Who talks about the importance of this? Right? Means these courses are going on because somebody, in Vrindavan and their thing in the MI, you know, then I think they do something in SA. They have a school there. They do something at Radhadesh. There's a few places that are doing, but it's they're doing it. You know, so if leadership supports it, then people will study and read and do all these things. But if leadership doesn't support it, then people will do something else. So it's just a matter of whatever's in the ether, that's what affects. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Vamsa is defined. We read that one. Footnote 11. We did that. We're on. Suta Goswami continued. There are four types of cosmic annihilation: occasional, elemental, continuous, and ultimate. Didn't we study that before?
Yeah.
You did. Okay. Just want to make sure that...
Yeah.
Because I remember
two chapters before.
He brought it up about that it's in the Sandarbhas, so that I thought, is that all the farther we got? Okay. All of which are affected by the inherent potency of the Supreme Lord. Learned scholars have designated this topic disillusion, samshta. Right? So that's the... He brings out this point, it's the inherent potency of the Supreme Lord. That's what makes it work. It's not working on its own. To be created, it's the Lord's potency. To maintain, it's the Lord's potency. To destroy, it's the Lord's potency. So it doesn't just happen on its own. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The previous term, Nirodha, here called Shamshtam, is explained. The destruction of the causes, bhava, of the universe, asya, such as earth, water, and fire, is called Shamshta. Suta Goswami continued. Out of ignorance, the living being performs material activities, and thereby becomes, in one sense, the cause, hetu, of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. Some authorities call the living being the personality underlying the material creation, while others say he is the unmanifest self. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. This verse defines hetu, the cause of sarga, visarga, etc. of the universe. Asya is the jiva. who performs actions out of ignorance. Because the Lord creates the universe for the jiva is called the cause. Some call the jiva the possessor of a body made of maya. Anushayinam means a covering of maya. Others, the devotees, say that the jiva who performs action out of ignorance, when he is situated on the path of bhakti, by devotee association, is the possessor of a spiritual body, of yakritam. The word uta means on the other hand. Narada has said, right? So the materialists, they just have the material body. What we see is the devotees, because they're on the spiritual path, then they're developing their spiritual body. It means they have it, it's just that that's being developed. While for the others, then it's covered, and they're just functioning within the modes of nature. No?
So the question might be, is it a conscious endeavor to develop this spiritual body? Or is it just we practice and then naturally it develops?
The example would be like, remember before when the example is being given that you eat, you don't have to separately try to get rid of hunger.
Right.
By eating, it gets rid of hunger. It creates nourishment.
Yes.
You know, you don't have to sit there and go, or do something more drastic, you know, sprinkle water around and hunger be gone. And, you know, you don't have to do that kind of stuff. No? No? You can.
It's called, I guess it's called conscious eating.
Yeah.
You're conscious how every cell of your body...
Yes, it's absorbing in and like that. No, you don't. You worry about pleasing Krishna under the guidance of the spiritual master and the association of devotees. That will the other will come automatically. Just like all the good qualities, they'll come automatically. Because if you're situated in bhakti, you have a spiritual body and all good qualities. So you don't have to separately, because the point is, because you're in bhakti, these things are there as a support. Just like you don't have to make a separate endeavor to get all, you know, get this body and all the qualities it has. You simply apply yourself into the situations you're in a materialistic way, and it will automatically develop this subtle and gross body for your next life. So in the same way, you are absorbed in the sadhana under authority, and it will automatically develop your natural position, your spiritual position, and the natural qualities that are there that you have. Is that? Narada has said, having been awarded a transcendental body, befitting an associate of the Lord, I quit the body made of five material elements in which karma had stopped. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.6.2. At the beginning of the prayers, yes, yeah, so it's here, it's been awarded a transcendental body, so you don't have to work it out yourself. At the beginning of the prayers of the personified Vedas, Sukadeva Goswami said, the Supreme Lord manifested the material intelligence, senses, mind, and vital air of the living entities so that they could indulge their desires for sense gratification, take repeated births to engage in fruitive activities, become elevated in future lives, and ultimately use their senses and intelligence for the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.2. So you could say that the living entity is the cause of the creation from that aspect. But the actual cause is the Lord's desire that, or the Lord's mercy, that the wayward living entities are getting an opportunity to come back to Him. But because being tatasta, that it's a matter of choice, then you need to make the choice. Right? And being eternal, we take our time. Yeah. But then eventually we come to the proper and then eternally stay in that, in the spiritual environment. Okay. Atmane kalpanaya means so jivas would make an offering of their intelligence, mind, senses, and prana to the Lord. End quote. Thus, the ninth characteristic previously mentioned, mukti, is the same as hetu, right? So the mukti is, we're talking about mainly about liberation, getting out, but it also means, why is there getting out? Because we came in. Why did we come in? And why is there an option to get out? Right? Why would there be an option that you can act in such a way that you can get out and go back to Godhead? Right? It's just the Lord's mercy. Right? Because if it was up to us, nobody'd get out. Like that.
We would.
Huh?
We would.
Maybe. But I mean, we get out just to watch everybody else. Or we have the, how you say, the front row seat watching everybody else burn in hell or something like that.
There's one Christian theologian who says that the delight of heaven is strengthened by the inhabitants of heaven watching the sufferings in hell.
Oh, so they're inspired that they're happy that they did the right thing because they didn't end up there.
That's their circus, probably.
Their circus, yeah. The Colosseum, right? Got to do something other than play on harps and float around in clouds all day, right?
Thomas
Aquinas, but I mean, yeah, Thomas. Yeah, well, because he brought, what's his name?
Aristotle.
Yeah, Aristotle into Catholicism to somehow or another make it that the intellectuals might be more pleased. Okay, so here many times it's just broadening, like I said, vichar, it's just broadening the understanding of what the topic is. So you're getting out, but why do you get out? Because you came in with material desire, that didn't work, and now then, by the Lord's mercy, you can then go back out. That means it already had to be a plan like that. So the Lord, He creates it so that you can get out. So that's why then mukti is the aspect. But we're here not because of our desire for mukti. Right? Yeah. Muktir hitvan yata rupam swarupena vyabhastitihi. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6 means to attain a spiritual form. And that is explained also in the present verse. Right? So mukti is not just liberation, but it's actually developing a relationship with the Lord. Right? Sutta Goswami continued, the Supreme Absolute Truth is present throughout all the stages of awareness, waking consciousness, sleep, and deep sleep. Throughout all the phenomena manifested by the illusory energy, and within the functions of all living entities. And he also exists separate from all of these, thus situated in his own transcendence. He is the ultimate and unique shelter, apasraya. Right, so then that he's the shelter, so then all these aspects. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, this verse explains apasraya, that Brahman, which as a cause is present in all objects, maya, mayeshu, in states of waking, dreaming, and deep sleep, but which is separate from them, vyatireka, is called apashraya. How will he give shelter? It means he is everything. That's how it all functions. But at the same time, he's separate of that. That's how he's the shelter. So us understanding everything in connection with him, then taking shelter of the Lord, then that's how you'll get your mukti, how you'll develop your spiritual form. Right? No? Yeah. Sutta Goswami continued, although a material object may assume various forms and names, its essential ingredient is always present as the basis of its existence. Similarly, both conjointly and separately, the Supreme Absolute Truth is always present with the created material body throughout its phases of existence, beginning with conception and ending with death. Yeah, essentially, maybe you could also say that the primary creation is the essential ingredients, like that, and then the secondary is then the application of those. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. This is explained with an example. A material like earth is present in an object like a pot and is separate as well. Excuse me. Since it exists beyond the pot. In objects with name and form, sense objects like fragrance as well as their cause, ahankara and tamas, are present in the objects and are also beyond the objects. Right, so then the fragrance is there in the object, but the fragrance is also beyond the object. Otherwise, how is there fragrance in the object? Because sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. So fragrance is the principle of the earth. Then you may appreciate the fragrance in a specific application. Right? But in essence, it's always there. In all states of the body, from impregnation to death, that which is present as the controller and witness is also separate, is called apashraya. Right? So the Lord is always there. He's present from beginning to end, but at the same time, he's separate from that whole process. Sutta Goswami continued. Right? So then that principle of everything comes from him, and everything's in him, but he is separate.
Yeah.
Right? Like that. Sutta Goswami continued. Either automatically or because of one's regulated spiritual practice, one's mind may stop functioning on the material platform of waking consciousness, sleep, and deep sleep. Then one understands the Supreme Soul and withdraws from material endeavor. Now, remember, because Pariksit Maharaj, then he did that and withdrew from material endeavor. Right?
But that's, we talk about mechanistic way of doing that?
It says either automatically or because of one's regulated spiritual practice. So the point is all this will happen. It will either happen either automatically because you're absorbed in the Lord, or you may go through some regulated yogic process to do. But it's still, it has to be the recommended with the right attitude. The Lord's pleased, it works. Or you're just so absorbed in the Lord that it works anyway. Okay. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Having explained the 10 characteristics of a purana, a verse is given to understand the topic. Similarly, it has been stated. The great devotees such as Vidura and Maitreya describe properly the 9 topics in order to impart the highest knowledge of the 10th topic. Through the words of the scriptures and stories to illustrate their meaning. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.2. Right? So there, it says, words of scripture and stories to illustrate their meaning. So you use both. Does that make sense? You know, whatever's appropriate. The power of bhakti has already been stated. Quote, that bhakti quickly destroys the subtle body, just as the digestive fire consumes food. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.25.33. Giving up the 3 states of material consciousness by pure bhakti, yogena, consisting of hearing and chanting, the mind spontaneously becomes detached, vira metta, from the gunas, or the mind. Or the mind take great joy, vishesha rameta, spontaneous in the lotus feet of the Lord. Or, by Astanga Yoga, the mind becomes detached and reaches nirvana. At that time, the mind realizes Paramatma, Atmanam, and becomes detached from material desires. Ihaya. So it's either that spontaneous devotion, the regulated devotion, or through using the regulated elements of yoga. Right? So either the Astanga Yoga, the Karma Yoga, the Jnana Yoga, these aspects will do. Right, does that make sense? So they're in support of the sadhana bhakti, which is the support of, I say, the aspect of attachment. Huh? Of rag. Yes?
So when previously it was mentioned automatically, it means spontaneous. It just,
yes.
You don't think about it, it just happens.
It just happens.
You absorb in Krishna fully.
Yes.
Or by the method of sadhana.
Yes. It's just whatever works. In other words, if rag is working, that means you've already done the sadhana.
Right.
So you see someone in this life, then they're acting on a more spontaneous platform. That's because previously they've already done the Vaidhi. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not that they just go from zero, you know, and it's happening. It will appear in this life that is that, but it's already been done. That's why it says it takes so many lifetimes. Mm-hmm. But the process is, if you're absorbed so that Krishna becomes what's important, so at the time of death you remember Krishna, then you'll be transferred to the spiritual world. And then from there, then whatever's lacking in your position, right, that will be then filled in until it gets to prema. Does that make sense? So, like that. So it doesn't matter. Even a neophyte remembers Krishna, they can go back to Godhead. But then from that particular position of their realization, the neophyte, that's where they'll start from in the spiritual world. Right? But it won't have the material elements to it, because there's no conditioning. Right? Because they've been purified. But their realization of Krishna, how much they're attracted to Krishna or attached to Krishna, it'll start from there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But being there in the spiritual world in the association of, you know, the Lord's associates, then it develops very quickly. Does that make sense? So the idea is then, in that one lifetime in Gokul, then you're going to come to the platform of prema. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So one lifetime here, through sadhana, we can get ourselves to bhava. Mm-hmm. And then in that lifetime in bhava in the spiritual world, then that one we can get ourselves to prema, and then you're just transferred to the Goloka, where then it's always going on.
Yeah, that's when you reward the eternal body by the Lord Himself.
No, you already have that eternal body in Gokul. When it's during that development of bhava to prema, that is your spiritual body. Then it becomes surup, siddhi, you know, or perfect, when now you're able to use that directly in Krishna's service by engaging in his pastimes. Mm-hmm. And then by that you come to the platform of prema, then you inherit, where then you'll always function on that platform. That makes sense. But the spiritual bodies, because spiritual bodies with this already with us now, it's just covered. So,
So on that point of Vaidhi and Rag, what defines whether, you know, some practitioners, they go further into Rag and some just happy with Vaidhi and go Vaikuntha Loka?
No. For it depends upon what is your goal. Because if your goal is Braj, by performing the Vaidhi to please Krishna, then when they go to Gokul, that from there they'll begin with Rag. Or someone might start Rag earlier within the Madhyama platform.
Yeah.
But the others on an Uttama platform, then from there they'll start practicing Rag. So it doesn't matter, because Bhava means Rag. Does that make sense? It's the bud of prema.
Yeah.
So it's about that attraction and attachment to Krishna. So it's all about rag. So those who have prema, those are ragatmika devotees. Rag is the atma, or the life. And those who are following them, that's raganugas. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's all about rag. But here, depending on the individual, rag may awaken or not before that point. Right? But it'll be in the Madhyama platform. The neophyte platform, it won't be, because we're too distracted. Not that there's not some spontaneous attraction in some areas, but it's not enough by volume that you would call it rag.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The guy's got, you know, 5 rupees in his pocket. So it is money, but do you say he's got money? You understand? So that's it's volume. So it's not prominent. So it's like, you know, the kirtan, one's, you know, really absorbed and one's really attracted like that. But then, you know, until the next 6 months, until the next kirtan mela, then one's doing, you know, all of this and that and not so absorbed in kirtan. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But for the person who's on that platform, whether there's a kirtan or not, he's always absorbed. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, or there may be some area where that it comes up, like you said. You know, with the, you know, in the during the kirtan, it may be there. Others, and the darshan, the deity, you know, whatever it is, like that. You know, the brahmachari is that bucket of halava. That's pure rag.
It's right there.
Yeah, it's realization. Right? Yeah. And they're spontaneous. Whether there's a spoon, there's not a spoon. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. It's transcendental to all the rules.
Yeah.
No? Yeah. And if you throw in some sweet rice, then it just gets even better. You know? then you start manifesting all the anubhavs, sattvika bhavs, and santari bhavs, right? Yes.
Maharaj, what is the exact moment of death? Because we heard before
the exact moment of death. You need to know. What do you mean by exact moment?
Because we heard that when Paramatma leaves, actually, what is like the consciousness or the mind?
But why can't all that happen at once?
That's what
it's just like, you know, when exactly is he, you know, I say, when exactly do you actually leave the house? You know, is it when, you know, you're out the door? What about your clothes and that? The muffler behind you is trailing a little bit. Are you still out? Are you still in the house because the muffler's there? You know, like that. And, you know, especially if someone slams the door and the muffler gets caught, and then you go up in the air and then like this. Point is that When the time is up for the living entity, then he leaves. So if Paramatma leaves first and takes the soul with him, and along with that comes the mind and all the other, you know, I say some scars that you have, all the baggage that goes with it, and but your body and money and all that stuff will stay behind. Sorry, Scrooge tried.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
Maybe for him.
No, he was pointing out that all the other guys that he was associates with, it didn't work for them either. No?
Egyptians also tried before him.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it just doesn't. It's still there. It's all sitting in the, you know, some museum in London or Smithsonian or something. So. Yeah, it didn't work. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you say that it requires minimum two lifetimes to go to Golok? It's 1 year.
It takes two lifetimes. So why put it like that? The point is there a difference between Goloka and Gokul?
It's actually not, but still.
Yeah, is there a difference between Goloka and Gokul?
Yes.
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 Mm-hmm. Okay, so how is it yes? Explain.
Because Gokul is a spiritual world inside the material world.
Yeah, but it's the same place. It's just place. Like the embassy. Is it the country it's in, or it's the country that it's the embassy of?
Yeah, that's the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Gokul is simply an embassy. It's non-different. It means we try to make this difference, but those from Goloka don't. They just see one situated up, one situated down. It's the same place.
Yeah, because they are the eternal associates. That's why they don't make a difference.
Yes, but that's the viewpoint. If you use the material viewpoint of time and space, then you run the risk of staying within the realm of time and space. So since it has been said in one lifetime you go back to Godhead, back to Godhead means to go cool. So then when we try to make it that it's two lifetimes, then why would we do that? You know what I'm saying? Is it just to be different? It's unique? It's the intellectual fun?
No, because still the prema has not been reached. Bow to prema, that distance has to be traveled. That's the reason why. Because it's,
yes, it's but the point is have you gone back to Godhead?
Not yet.
I couldn't hear.
Just as well. It's a confusion in time and space and trying to apply it on the transcendental realm. What means to be situated on the transcendental platform? What does it mean?
Krishna consciousness.
Yes. So, in Gokul, are they Krishna conscious?
Yes.
In Goloka, are they Krishna conscious?
Of course, yes.
So, you're making a distinction here. Why would you make a distinction when the Acharyas and the Eternal Associates don't? Why would you insist on there being a difference? You know what I'm saying? Just to intellectually point out that a particular seemingly fact is contradicting the idea of one lifetime. You know, because we found something that's different, now we can say it's two, and now we can use that in all our expressions, and from that we can bewilder the minds of the devotees because our intellect is so great, it has the power of bewilderment. And so, since when has the power of bewilderment been seen by the Acharyas as something of an advantage? So in other words, areas that are not controlled by time and space, why are you insisting that it must apply? As if our perspective is the real perspective. We're saying that the residents of Goloka see no difference. And you're putting that aside but to us it's different. But we're materialists. What does it matter what we think? Since when does our opinion take precedent over Krishna and his eternal associates?
It's a commentary on Brahma Samhita on that verse, Sastra Patra Kamalanga Kulakam Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he says that those who attain Sarup Siddhi, they see Golok in Gokul. But those who attain Vastu Siddhi, they see Gokul in Golok.
Yeah, there's a difference of perspective. Because when the pastimes are performed, they perform the pastimes as if they're in Gokul. They don't It's not that you get to Golok, okay, finally we're at Golok. No, the pastimes are performed according to the perspective of Gokul. That's why Krishna said, Prabhupada makes the point, that Mother Jashoda thinks if I don't feed Krishna, he'll die. Because that's a concept here. They function like that there. But they function like that. It's about Krishna. It's not about us. So we're trying to say that that's the real thing. And below that, it's not really the real thing. But that's how you don't get there. You get there by understanding they're non-different. Just like I said, one who understands Krishna's, you know, birth and activities and pastimes, then they're situated on the transcendental platform. They're, when you understand Krishna's transcendental activities, then you become transcendental. So when you understand Gokul is transcendental, you become transcendental. And as long as you think Gokul is not actually transcendental, then you never actually become transcendental. You understand? So that's why when you get to that level, then it's about the appreciation of the Lord with his pastimes with the devotees. That's the focus. If we still try to apply the conditions of jnana yoga, then it will be, you'll always come up short. That's why when you get to that level, it's offered to Krishna and left there at the door. We can explain the technicalities of it, but we're not applying jnana yoga on it. You have to understand there's a difference. Analyzing the rasa according to how the acharyas are giving the unfolding of the vibhav, anubhav, satyavikabhav, and sanchari bhavas. Right? That kind of analyzation is within that aspect of pleasing Krishna. But when we try to apply the aspect of time and space and that on it, that's where then we shouldn't be doing that. You understand? Yeah, just like, let's say, just for example, before the big program, all the ladies and girls are in the room, they're all getting dressed, right? For the program. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Into the room walks, you know, a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old, you know, and wants to ask his mommy a question. Is there a problem? No. Because all the ladies are in various levels of dress. Is it a problem? No. Because he sees no difference. Now what happens with somebody who's older walks in?
Problem.
They're immediately tossed out. That's what we're talking about. So you have to be careful with that. It's not that it can't be analyzed, but it has to be analyzed with the transcendental measure, not with the material measure. So, makes sense yet or not?
Yes, of course.
Okay, very good. So we can move on?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Verses 22-25, because notice the beginning is you see Gokul in Goloka, means how you say? Goloka in Gokul.
Yeah.
But if you don't see Goloka in Gokul, then you're not actually there. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Verses 22-25, major and minor Puranas. Suta Goswami continued, sages expert in ancient histories have declared that the Puranas, according to their various characteristics, can be divided into 18 major Puranas and 18 secondary Puranas. The 18 major Puranas are the Brahma, Padma, Vishnu, Shiva, Linga, Garuda, Narada, Bhagavat, Agni, Skanda, Bhavishya, Brahma Vaivarta, Markandeya, Vamana, Varaha, Matsya, Kurma, and Brahmananda Puranas. I have thoroughly described to you, O Brahmana, the expansion of the branches of the Vedas by the great sage Vyas, his disciples, and the disciples of his disciples. One who listens to this narration will increase in spiritual strength. Conclusion. Out of ignorance, a living being performs material activities, and thereby becomes, in one sense, the cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. Right? Because so that's what it means, in one sense. It's the Lord who is, but in one sense, because it's being manifest as the living entity has the desire. Chapter 8. Markandeya's prayers to Narayan Rishi. Particular. Because the Supreme Lord is the protector and the supreme controller of all moving and non-moving beings. Anyone who takes shelter of his lotus feet can never be touched by the common contamination of material work, material qualities, or time. Dialogue overview. The mentioning of the name of Markandeya Muni in the last chapter inspired the next question of Sri Shonaka Rishi. Shonaka Rishi asked Srila Sutta Goswami question 12.3 of Srimad Bhagavatam from 12.85. O Sutta, I am most bewildered and curious about this great sage, Markandeya Rishi. O great yogi, you are universally accepted as the authority on all the Puranas. Therefore, kindly dispel my confusion. Srila Sutta Goswami answers this question throughout the rest of this chapter until the end of chapter 10. Okay, so it goes through the next three chapters. Okay, so Markandeya Rishi. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the eighth chapter, Markandeya performs austerity, and the apsaras attempt to disturb his vows. Oh, this is where that part is from. Shardarta Darshani 12.8.1. Sri Shanaka was confused about the extraordinary long lifespan of Sri Markandeya, who had taken birth in Shanaka's own dynasty, yet who had moved about alone in the ocean of devastation millions of years previously and seen a wonderful young child lying upon a banyan leaf. It seemed to Shonaka that Markandeya had lived through 2 days of Brahma, and he asked Sri Sutta Goswami to explain this. Because it did seem to make sense. Sutta Goswami replied that the sage Markandeya, after receiving the purificatory ritual of Brahminical initiation from his father, had fixed himself in the vow of lifelong celibacy. He then worshipped the Supreme Lord Hari for 6 lifetimes of Manu. Okay, that's a while.
Yeah, it was before.
It seems to be sometime before.
No, I mean before he got the benediction.
It must be.
No, because he already lived 6 lifetimes of Manu. It's a bit too long. Didn't have enough. It's coming up.
He's celibate, you know. You can eat halva every day. It's not a problem. No, it's not. Every day, I say. The natural, I say, Navayovana nature of halva, because halva is Krishna, and Krishna is ever fresh.
Let's see what he did.
Yes, let's see what he did. Okay. So 6 lifetimes of Manu, we see is that, what was his name? Was doing daksha. It was sometime, no?
Can't remember. Second to 6th.
Yeah, in the 6th, but he, because it was from the 1st, I can't remember where.
He skipped a few of them.
4th, 5th, and 6th, he was doing for 3 lifetimes.
He was doing which?
4th, 5th, and 6th.
He was, but what happened?
Tapasya was doing that.
He was doing tapasya. So he was doing for 3 lifetimes.
This guy is doing for 6.
And then.
And he's doing for 6.
And then he became a god before.
Who?
Daksha.
Daksha was before, then because of that curse and against, and ending up with a goat head, maybe that didn't work out so good. Probably his wife didn't look at him the same anymore, you know.
Goatee.
Yeah. You know. I mean, it's okay, you know, I mean, you know, the goatee, okay, but, you know, the eyes, you know, it's like, you know, it's just. Yeah. So, whatever, for 3 lifetimes, and then we see is that he had such nice understanding that, you know, he then recited the Hamsaguya prayers. You know.
That's it.
Yeah. And then I guess he carried on with his duties and all that. We haven't heard otherwise. Right? But here Markandeya then, he worshipped the Supreme Lord for 6 lifetimes rather than just doing austerity. He was worshipping the Lord. And so then, you know, something comes from that. In the 7th Manvantara, Lord Indra sent Kamadev, Cupid, and his associates to interrupt the sage's austerities. So that means that he would have been the 7th Indra. So the 1st 6 didn't really worry about it. The 7th, now he's starting to get worried. But Markandeya Rishi defeated them by the potency generated from his penance. Okay. Sorry, Then, to show mercy to Markandeya, Lord Sri Hari appeared before him in the form of Naranarayana. Sri Markandeya prostrated himself in obeisance and then worshipped the lords by offering them comfortable seats, water for washing their feet, and other respectful presentations. He then prayed, "O Almighty Lord, you bring life to the vital air of all creatures, and you also protect the three worlds, vanquish distress, and award liberation. You never allow those who have taken shelter of you to be defeated by any kind of misery. Attaining your lotus feet is the only auspicious goal for the conditioned souls, and service to you fulfills all their desires. Your pastimes, enacted in the mode of pure goodness, can award everyone salvation from material life. Therefore, those who are intelligent worship your personal form of pure goodness named Sri Narayana, along with Nara, who represents your unalloyed devotee. The living entity, bewildered by illusion, can directly understand you if he receives the knowledge presented in the Vedas and promulgated by you, the spiritual master of the entire universe. Even great thinkers like Brahma are simply bewildered when they try to understand your identity by struggling on the path of Shankhya Yoga. You yourself manifest the proponents of Shankhya and other philosophies, and thus your true personal identity remains hidden beneath the designative covering of the jiva soul. I offer my homage to you, the Mahapurusha." Because he's the one who reveals all these different philosophies to these different persons and inspires them. And so in this way, he becomes hidden. So it's only that he's there as the super soul. That's the only way you know he's there. Shloka Anusharana, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 13. The character and activities of Markandeya Rishi. 14 to 31. Indra attempts to sway Markandeya's meditation. 32 to 49. Markandeya's prayers to Naranarayan Rishi. Verses 1 to 13. The character and activities of Markandeya Rishi. Sri Shonaka said, "O Suta, may you live a long life. O saintly one, best of speakers, please continue speaking to us. Indeed, only you can show men the path out of the ignorance in which they are wandering." Authorities say that Markandeya Rishi, the son of Mrikandu, was an exceptionally long-lived sage who was the only survivor at the end of Brahma's day, when the entire universe was merged in the flood of annihilation. But this same Markandeya Rishi, the foremost descendant of Bhrigu, took birth in my own family during the current day of Brahma. And we have not yet seen any total annihilation in this day of Brahma. Also, it is well known that Markandeya, while wandering helplessly in the great ocean of annihilation, saw in those fearful waters a wonderful personality, an infant boy lying alone within the fold of a banyan leaf. Yeah, here, this one. Where it just says there, where we just were.
Mm-hmm.
In a wonderful personality, an infant boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one. That dash?
Yeah, that dash.
Yeah, that dash. It's important, then you know that it's English. Without punctuation, it doesn't mean anything.
Modern English.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's a problem. "O Suta, I am most bewildered and curious about this great sage, Markandeya Rishi, a great yogi. You are universally accepted as the authority in all the Puranas. Therefore, I kindly dispel my confusion." Right, because this will be a historical account, and so him being the authority in the Purana, then he would be able to dispel the doubt. So he has faith that he can dispel the doubt. Right? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, "Market."
Regarding the faith. Can we say that because our process is the descending process, that's why faith is the essential element? While if it's ascending process, faith is not that necessary.
I mean, on one level you could look at it like that. But the descending process can actually take you, because it descends, it comes from Krishna, the topmost, down to us, and then from there it can go back. This, I think, that aspect of his descending down into is known as adhoksaja. in the ways of gaining knowledge, then it hoaxes you, because Krishna comes down and enters into everything. And so then you can very nicely connect Dharma to that. And then the other things below Dharma, you have to connect to Dharma, and then from Dharma connect it up. Otherwise it won't be seen. So that has that. But if you're talking the ascending process can't get beyond the universe. So it actually, it's not like there's two equal paths. That one you can operate without faith and one you operate with faith. It's just that one works and the other doesn't. Right? The other thing is even if you're ascending, you have to have faith in that process of ascension that you're using. So if you're using karma, using jnana, or using yoga, you know, whatever branch or aspect that you're focusing on, you have to have faith in that for it to work. Because as it said, without bhakti, none of these paths work. Like bhakti is actually the working element. Bhakti takes a secondary role, but without bhakti, it can't function. Is that? Yeah. So, bottom line, one needs faith. Yeah. No? Srila Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur writes, Markandeya Purana was mentioned in verse 24 of the last chapter. That brought to Shaunaka's mind the story of Markandeya. Thus he asked about this now. That's the dialogue. Sudha Goswami said, O great sage Shaunaka, your very question will help remove everyone's illusion, for it leads to the topics of Lord Narayan. Right? So that's what's important, is what brings you to Narayan. Whatever topic will bring you there, then that's the perfect topic. Which cleanse away the contamination of this Kali age. After being purified by my father's performance of the prescribed rituals, leading to Markandeya's Brahminical, to Markandeya's Brahminical initiation, Markandeya studied the Vedic hymns and strictly observed the regulative principles. He became advanced in austerity and Vedic knowledge and remained a lifelong celibate. Appearing most peaceful with his matted hair and his clothing made of bark, he furthered his spiritual progress by carrying the mendicant's water pot, staff, sacred thread, brahmachari belt, black deerskin, lotus seed prayer beads, and bundles of kusa grass. It's one of the recommended beads. Like the Madhuas, they chant their japa on lotus seeds. Like that. So it's one of the beads. We prefer Tulsi, but it's considered one of the auspicious beads. Only difficulty with lotus seeds, at least in Bengal, ants love them. Oh, it's like ecstasy. So you have lotus seeds, the ants find it, except for the outside shell, they'll eat everything inside. Like that. With great enthusiasm. So at least for Bengal, I wouldn't recommend it. They, you know, so Tulsi is of course the best, but if you don't, neem also works very good. Ants don't bother it. So I guess somehow or another in South there's less ants or something, so
maybe they're just not as aggressive as here.
Could be.
I think also Hari Bhakti Vilas mentioned that we can use lotus seeds or
fruits. Yeah, I mean they're standard. They're like that. We prefer Tulsi, but they're all bona fide. And bundles of kusa grass. At the sacred junctures of the day, he regularly worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead in five forms. The sacrificial fire, the sun, his spiritual master, the brahmanas, and the supersoul within his heart. Right, so he saw them all as the Lord, representing the Lord, so non-different from the Lord. Morning and evening he would go out begging, and upon returning he would present all the food he had collected to his spiritual master. Only when his spiritual master invited him would he silently take his one meal of the day, otherwise he would fast. Thus devoted to austerity and Vedic study, Markandeya Rishi worshipped the Supreme Master of the senses, the personality of Godhead, for countless millions of years, and in this way he conquered unconquerable death. Lord Brahma, Bhrigumuni, Lord Shiva, Prajapati Daksha, the great sons of Brahma, and many others among the human beings, demigods, forefathers, and ghostly spirits, all were astonished by the achievement of Markandeya Rishi. In this way, the devotional mystic Markandeya attained rigid celibacy through penance, study of the Vedas, and self-discipline. With his mind thus free from all disturbances, he turned it inward and meditated on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who lies beyond the material senses. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, he meditated with a mind, antaratmana, free from all kleshas, such as attachment. Footnote 12. Riti, there are five kleshas, ignorance, ego, attachment, hatred, and absorption in material existence. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
What do you call it? Standard issue?
Like our companions.
Hmm?
Those are our companions.
Yeah, yes. Our constant companions, yes. But he was free from all these kleshas. Right, so klesha means they give you trouble. Ignorance gives you trouble. Ego, attachment, hatred, and absorption, material. They all give trouble. It's just their nature. Verses 14 to 31, Indra attempts to sway Markandeya Rishi's meditation. Suta Goswami continued, while the mystic sage thus concentrated his mind by powerful yoga practice, the tremendous period of six lifetimes of Manu passed by. O Brahma, during the seventh reign of Manu, the current age, Lord Indra came to know of Markandeya's austerities and became fearful of his growing mystic potency.
The current age the Goswami refers to now?
Seems so. Because Sonika Rishi is saying he's born in you know, from this day, but it seems he was there from there, before.
This is seventh.
Yeah. Seventh. So then he is, what do you call it? In this Manvantar, it happened. But when in this Manvantar, it hasn't said so far. Because we're in the 28th cycle now. So it would have been sometime before that. Mm-hmm. Thus he tried to impede the sage's penance. To ruin the sage's spiritual practice, Lord Indra sent Cupid, beautiful celestial singers, dancing girls, the season of spring, and the sandalwood-scented breeze from the Malaya hills, along with greed and intoxication personified. He was not... No, he was being very thorough, right? Yeah. O most powerful Shonika, they went to Markandeya Rishi's hermitage on the northern side of the Himalaya mountains, where the Pushpabhadra River passes by the famous peak Chitra. Groves of pious trees decorated the holy ashram of Markandeya Rishi, and many saintly brahmanas lived there, enjoying the abundant, pure, sacred ponds. The ashram resounded with the buzzing of intoxicated bees and the cooing of excited cuckoos, while jubilant peacocks danced about. Indeed, many families of maddened birds crowded that hermitage. The springtime breeze sent by Lord Indra entered there, carrying cooling drops of spray from nearby waterfalls. Fragrant from the embrace of forest flowers, that breeze entered the hermitage and began evoking the lusty spirit of Cupid. Like in Krishna's pastimes in Braj, then the breeze specifically goes through places that will have nice fragrances and then comes and blows on Krishna. Yes. So here the same thing, they're just using it on a mundane kind of purpose. Springtime then appeared in Markandeya's ashram. Indeed, the evening sky, glowing with the light of the rising moon, became the very face of spring, and sprouts and fresh blossoms virtually cover the multitude of trees and creepers, right? Just in his ashram, right? All the other guys are, what? Why his ashram?
What is
important?
Maybe they don't even notice.
That could be also.
What is the importance of springtime?
What's the importance of spring? Spring's considered, it's always the universally accepted as kind of by the romantic kind of time of the year. Like that. You know, I guess when after you freezing freezing in winter, then finally spring comes and then
defreeze. You defreeze.
Yes.
Right. Krishna in Gita he says among season and the
yes. Yes, he's the spring. So it has that potency. Plus he's the moon, he's all these things. Cupid, the master of many heavenly women, then came there holding his bow and arrows. He was followed by groups of Gandharvas playing musical instruments and singing. Right, so you see it's not they just all come there, but they have their role to play. You know, first the breeze comes in, then the spring comes in, then Cupid comes in, and then he brings everybody else. So it's, you know, nicely orchestrated. He was followed by groups of Gandharvas playing musical instruments and singing. These servants of Indra found the sage sitting in meditation, having just offered his prescribed oblations into the sacrificial fire. His eyes closed in trance. He seemed invincible, like fire personified. The women danced before the sage, and the celestial singers sang to the charming accompaniment of drums, cymbals, and veenas, while the son of passion, greed personified. Okay. So passion's son is greed, right? Yeah, because you get some, then you want more, right? So then greed is... Spring and other servants of Indra tried to agitate Markandeya's mind. Cupid drew his five-headed arrow and fixed it upon his bow. Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, The five heads of the arrow are drying up, bewilderment, agitation, suffering, and exhilaration. Yeah, somehow or another, on the material platform, that how does, you know, it's hard to, it's interpreted as happiness. But it's only actually happiness on the spiritual platform. Yeah. Sudha Goswami continued, the apsara Panki Kashtali made a show of playing with a number of toy balls. Her waist seemed weighed down by her heavy breasts, and the wreath of flowers in her hair became disheveled. As she ran about after the balls, glancing here and there, the belt of her thin garment loosened, and suddenly the wind blew her clothes away. Cupid, thinking he had conquered the sage, then shot his arrow. But all these attempts to seduce Markandeya proved futile, just like the useless endeavors of an atheist. A learned Shonaka, while Cupid and his followers tried to harm the sage, they felt themselves being burned alive by his potency. Thus they stopped their mischief, just like children who have aroused a sleeping snake. O Brahmana, the followers of Lord Indra, had impudently attacked the saintly Markandeya, yet he did not succumb to any influence of false ego. For great souls, such tolerance is not at all surprising. The mighty King Indra was most astonished when he heard of the mystic prowess of the exalted sage Markandeya and saw how Cupid and his associates become powerless in his presence. Right, so then they understood and they stopped, they left. Went back, told Indra, and then, okay. Verses 32 to 49. Okay, we tried 39, then 29. Okay, now we got the only one left is 49, right? Sudha Goswami continued, desiring to bestow his mercy upon the saintly Markandeya, who had perfectly fixed his mind in self-realization through penance, Vedic study, and observation of regulative principles. The Supreme Personality of Godhead personally appeared before the sage in the forms of Nara and Narayana. One of them was of a whitish complexion, the other blackish, and they both had four arms. Their eyes resembled the petals of blooming lotuses, and they wore garments of black deerskin and bark, like his black deerskin, specifically Brahmins. like that. The Kshatriyas who use the spotted deer, like that. Along with the three-stranded sacred thread. Right, because as brahmacharis, then they just wear the three strands. Right? Does that mean? No? Yeah.
People speculate about how many strands should we wear, and it's like so many opinions are there.
Really?
Yeah.
How many opinions can you have?
As many strands.
From three to four.
As many as three. That's three. That's not bad.
Six.
Hmm?
Nine. Six, nine.
Six, okay.
Nine opinions.
Some say six for the grihastha, some say nine for the grihastha, some say 12 for the sannyasi, and you know, like.
Just wear the whole thing.
The Upanayanam for the Brahma Gayatri then has three threads.
Right.
You know, because they come in groups of three.
Yes.
So in one group, so the three threaded means it's one group. Right? So, those three are for the Brahma Gayatri. Now, then the Grihastha, he wears another set of threads for his wife. Because she doesn't wear a thread.
Right?
So that's how you get six for the Grihastha.
Yeah.
Now, if you're doing deity worship and that, then the idea is you're always wearing your cloth and an upper cloth. The chadar has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But if somehow another... that something happens, you don't have that or that. That's what that third set is for. It represents the upper cloth.
Mm.
Right? So therefore, grihasthas are doing puja, then they wear nine. Brahmacharis are doing puja would wear six. So we always wear six because we're functioning in the pancharatrik system. In the Vedic, you only require the three. But in the pancharatrik, then they'll use the six. Does that make sense? And so the sannyasis who've gone through this in order like this could wear 12.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can wear one. I mean, use the three.
Three.
Yeah. So that's how you get. That's all mentioned in Manu.
Oh.
So it's not different opinions. It's just these are the options. So now in Bengal, they don't look at it from that Vedic viewpoint. They look at it that nine threads are the nine qualities of a Brahmin. Therefore, all Brahmins should wear nine threads. So you generally see here is that, you know, if you want things to go smoothly, just use nine threads. So it doesn't matter if you're a brahmachari, you're a grihastha, sannyasi, you just wear nine, and the Bengalis will leave you alone. I've even had once, you know, I was on the train, you know, I think there's no space, and I'm standing there like that, and then I feel something behind me, and there's a guy sitting there back, like they're counting the threads on how many are there. And so when it was nine, he was quite happy. You know, then we're bona fide. And if it wasn't nine, I would have heard something until the end of the train journey, right? So. It's just that they keep adding one. So in there, you could wear, in that consideration, you're wearing three. Is for the brahmachari, six for the grihastha, nine for the vanaprastha, and 12 for the sannyasi. It's just a matter of whether you're just taking one for each of the ashrams, or you're considering, you know, the deity worship, like that. That's how that goes.
So like the group of three means what? When you say that the group of three, that each...
Three means what?
When you say that three threads, three strands of threads is one group.
I'm not sure.
Individual spread means...
Probably Bur Bhuva Swa, but I can't say for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or AUM, or, you know, like that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Hmm? I think to be safe, we should probably say no.
Today's Sankranti, I've got prasad.
Yes, Sankranti is Sankranti.
And there will be no classes on Thursday and Friday. No morning.